I am Jake Friedman. I am 14 years old. Today is November 23rd, 2017, Thanksgiving. I am in Studio City, California, and I'm interviewing Saul Friedman, my grandpa. So, can you tell me why your parents decided to move across the country from Boston to Los Angeles when you were in the middle of high school?
Well, middle of high school was not a consideration, which made me very angry. A big consideration was my father. He didn't want to be working at his job during the wintertime because it was very difficult. He was a route foreman. That meant he had to be in his van or his truck during the worst weather in the wintertime. And he thought it would be a lot easier to work in a better climate, like Los Angeles.
So without anyone else's consideration, he just decided to uproot your family and move them across the country?
No, it didn't happen quite that way. We came to California to visit. We have relatives here. My mother had a sister, and she was married. She had two boys.
So were you living there when you first moved, or did you stay with them?
No, we stayed with them. We hadn't moved yet. We were just visiting. My father, we came out by train, and we stayed about a month and a half. My father flew out by airplane, obviously, and stayed 2 weeks for his vacation.
Why did you train over opposed to fly across the country?
My mother was afraid to fly.
Oh.
So I went with her. And I thought it would be an adventure anyway to
how
go
long,
across country.
How long was the train ride to get from
About
Boston?
About 5 days.
5 days.
We went through Chicago and the Grand Canyon, through Arizona, the Painted Desert. It was really a beautiful trip. On the Super Chief and the El Capitan, the two very famous trains.
So, you know, when you moved here, what was it like on the first day of your new school, not knowing anyone? What was it like going into your first class?
Well, that's not really true. I did know someone who was here. My friend Steve Schwartz moved out here with his family about a year before that. And they lived not far from my aunt's house on Coldwater Canyon. So the first, when I got off the train and we drove out to my aunt's house in Panorama City, I borrowed her car and she said, "Well, you don't know where you're going." I said, "I'll figure it out." So I got in her car and I drove to Steve's house. I knocked on his door and I was known as Solly in those days. "Solly, what are you doing here?" I said, "I'm visiting."
And did you guys go to school together?
We went to school together.
So what was it like just, I mean, you being the new kid, you only had one friend. Did he have other friends that you kind of integrated with, or what was it like?
Well, I was never very worried about making friends or my social life. So when I first went to Van Nuys High my first day of school, my biggest problem was a parking space.
Oh, you didn't have a parking space to park your car?
On the street, we finally did. Oh. But when I got to class, I started meeting people. And I met some really interesting people. And I found out that there was a number of cliques, you know, people that banded together.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I'm just going to try to get in. And then I recognized a fellow I hadn't seen in many years, also a friend from Boston, Ron Weiner. And I didn't know him that well, but I did know him. And so Ronnie and I, he was from a different ilk than Steve Schwartz was from. So I now had friends in two different classes in school.
Oh, nice. So you had friends everywhere.
Well, sort of. Didn't take long to make friends.
That's good. So, and then after that, was it weird on the first day of school, like at lunch? Like, did you have a friend group by lunchtime to sit with, or were you
No.
sitting alone that first day?
No, I don't remember sitting alone. I remember my first day, but I remember thinking I died and went to heaven, because in Boston, I went to high school, had seven classes a day, every day, 3 minutes between classes.
What was the difference between high school in Boston and high school in Los Angeles?
Far more regimented in Boston. Far more regimented, far more disciplined. I had to wear a tie every day. Here, came out here, all I had to do was just a pair of pants, and that's it. And I actually had something even crazy when they transferred my credits. And I went to Van Nuys High School. They said, "Oh, well, you'll have a free first period." I never heard of such a thing.
So you showed up in your first day of school, you didn't even have a class.
I didn't have a class, not a first period. I showed up in time for my second period.
That's nice. It gives you a little
time. Yeah, a little time. And after second period was brunch.
Oh, wow. So
I thought I died and went to heaven.
And what was your favorite memory on the journey across the country?
My favorite memory in a career? You know, I got to spend a lot of time with my mother that I never spent, you know, one-on-one. Then we got to Chicago. I wanted to see Chicago, so we went out off to the trains. Well, we had to change stations anyway. And it took me downtown to the Chicago Theater. I didn't know she knew anything about these places, but evidently she either read about them. My mother was an avid reader, so she read about all these places.
And do you now think it was a good decision to move across the country, or would you have rather stayed in Boston and lived there through high school and then gone wherever you would have gone for college?
It would have been better if I stayed in high school in Boston, for me personally, because the people I left behind were far more important to me than the ones I found. For example, your paternal grandmother. I was dating her.
At the time that you moved?
At the time we moved, and it was a very traumatic time for both of us. In fact, she gave me a going away party, and it was an interesting party. I mean, it was a lot of fun. We had cake. Somewhere there's pictures of it. And she made this party for me, and a lot of friends, most of them were her friends, but that's okay because they were, by that time, my friends. And moving cross-country, not being with her, was difficult.
So what did you do to compensate for not being around? Did you guys send letters to each other, or how did that work?
Well, your grandmother was not a big letter writer, but I found a telephone credit card. I'll tell you this story. I guess I can't go to jail now for it. Statute of limitations ran out. And I used it. I went to the phone booth inside Van Nuys High School, and I would call her. It was 3 hours later in Boston. I'd get her home. And I'd use that credit card to call her. And I talked to her half an hour, 45 minutes. Did it a few times a week. And it was great talking with her. I still even know Beacon 20559. Longwood 62284 were the phone numbers I called. And one day, I heard beep, 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 beep. And I realized I'd been found. Good thing I was wearing a jacket. One side was red, one side was reversible, it was beige. So I changed the jacket from red to beige and walked out. I never got caught.
What would you have been getting caught for?
Well, using a credit card didn't belong to me. A telephone credit card.
And would you guys see each other in the summer? Or?
No, I didn't see her for two more years. That was 1958.
So 2 years you guys long distance dated.
It was long distance, yeah. So in 1960... I joined the Army Reserve. And when I got out of active duty, got separate from active duty, and to come back to California, I flew to Boston. And she and my friend Normie and somebody else picked me up at Logan Airport. And I remember about that was I walked off the plane. You had steps in those days, no jetways. And I was wearing my summer uniform, but I had the big round saucer cap. And she come flying out of the terminal. It hit me a block. My cap went flying. It was so nice.
That's a good story.
It is a good story. And we spent the next 2.5-3 weeks together.
So I guess even though you moved, it all still worked out in the end.
It did work out in the end because the following summer, she came out to California. And she stayed for, supposed to stay a month. She stayed for three.
Oh, okay.
And the following summer... that was 1960 when I went to Boston. 1961 she came out. 1962 she came out. She almost missed her girlfriend's wedding because she didn't want to go home.
Oh my gosh.
Her girlfriend was married November 4th, day after my birthday.
Oh, so she wasn't going to leave.
She wasn't going to leave, but we just said, Rozzy's your friend, you should go. So she did. And we made plans that summer. We got engaged. I borrowed some money from my mother, went down to the jewelry mart with a recommendation from my cousin Seymour, and we bought I bought her an engagement ring. There's a funny story attached to that, because when we bought the ring, we're in this room, little office, and it was a glass case in front of us, and we decided on which stone she wanted. You're going to get that stone to give to your when you get engaged, but I gave it to your dad for your mother. But anyway, so she picks it up. So I want to see it one more time. So she picked it up with a pair of tweezers, and she dropped it. Now, diamonds are very hard, so it bounced off the glass, and it couldn't find it. It disappeared. It's a very expensive 1-point-something carat diamond ring, and we had no idea where it was. So we made her go into another office, and all the guys, it was three of us, four of us, took off our pants, we shook it out, checked our cuffs, no diamond. We looked on the floor with flashlights, no diamond. Grandmother was wearing a sundress, and it popped up and down into her bra. And she went in the other room, and she was not going to take her bra off because she didn't think that was important, but she did, and we found the stone.
That's so funny.
We took a break. It was funny. So we were able to go upstairs and buy the arrangement, the ring arrangement with the other stones.
So that stone that ended up in her bra is the same stone that's now family heirloom?
It's a family heirloom. Yeah, she was very, she loved that ring. And when our 10th anniversary, she had it made into a different ring. So I don't remember what happened. All that gold, I gave some to your father, some to Auntie Andy to make rings out of. So Auntie Debbie, Auntie Andy, and your dad all had some semblance of that, or what the ring and what it morphed into over the years. So they always carry something of Grandma Susan with them all the time. It's always nice to have something from somebody with you. That's why I wear my dad's mezuzah. So it's always nice. And I'm glad to see that it's going to be passed down again.
Thank you very much for joining me in this interview.
You're welcome. Did you learn anything?
Yeah.
What'd you learn?
I guess really not much. You've told most of these stories.
Yeah, I know.